hello and welcome to this episode of The Cyber Show. And we're welcome today, Seamus Lennon, who is the VP of Operations at ThreatLocker. Welcome, Seamus.
Thank you very much for having me on. Thank you.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your role at ThreatLocker? What does being the VP of Operations entail for you?
So as the VP of Operations for ThreatLocker, I oversee everything in the EMEA region. So the VP of Operations for EMEA. For anybody that doesn't know what ThreatLocker is, we are a zero trust endpoint security solution. So in overseeing the operations, I also oversee all the solution engineers here in ThreatLocker. Our solution engineers are slightly different than most company solution engineers in that we help our partners throughout the lifecycle of our partnership. So each client that comes on board with ThreatLocker gets assigned a dedicated solution engineer for the whole lifecycle of their partnership.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself as well and how you got into cybersecurity?
Oh, well, cybersecurity is one of those things that's sort of evolved over the past number of years, became prevalent. Myself personally, I've 25 plus years in IT. So yes, cybersecurity was one of those areas that was eventually going to fall in my lap. So, and here I am.
Absolutely. So the reality about applications is that you want them, but they're filthy, untrustworthy little things, and you don't know where they really came from or where they've been. So what inspired you to build an application wrapper?
So in terms of what we do, one of the main concepts that we do is application allowlessness. So application allowlessness merely just allows what you need to run, and it blocks and denies everything else. So the concept of ThreatLocker is to change the paradigm of security from a default allow, and let's hope we catch all the bad things, to a default deny, and only allow what you need to run. By utilizing that application allow list, we're not looking for every new malware that's written out there. We're just simply blocking everything.
I asked a trusted friend what she thought of ThreatLocker. She said, a simple interface to do in 10 minutes what a good sysadmin could do in 10 hours with policy rules and a lot of typing. Is that a fair summary?
That would be a very fair summary. One of the biggest issues with application allow listing is application allow listing is not a new solution. It's been around for years. The problem with application allow listing traditionally was it was very hands-on, very time-consuming, and very tedious to A, implement, but also B, maintain. With ThreatLocker solution, we make things easy. We push out an agent in learning mode. We learn what needs to be run, and then we just simply lock down the environment to block and deny everything else.
And the fact is that a lot of security doesn't happen because it's difficult, but because it's time consuming. So a workflow that makes things easier improves security because things get done now instead of put off until tomorrow. Let's talk about how you help with that.
Yeah, so in terms of what we do, after we have created that application allow list, we'll go through the environment and identify any of the applications we don't want to run in the environment. The common misconception for a lot of organizations is none of our end users have local administrator privileges, so they can't install anything on their devices, which is quite wrong, because 80% of the Microsoft Store, you don't require admin privileges to install applications. You don't require admin privileges to install anything in your app data folder. You don't require admin privileges to run standalone applications. So by identifying all these applications, we can actually stop them from executing in the environment. Once we're in that lockdown state, if there is a need for a genuine application, the user has an option to request access to that, which will go to an administrator, and within 60 seconds, that can be approved and allowed to run on that device.
So can you summarize ThreatLocker for our listeners, please, and especially talk about the UX side?
Yeah, so ThreatLocker itself, as I said, is a zero-trust endpoint security solution. It's managed centrally from a single location. It is a cloud-based solution which will deploy an agent out to each and every endpoint. As far as what we actually offer, we offer application allow listening as our primary goal. But when you think about it, application allow listening on its own isn't enough these days because attackers notice. So if they get into an environment with an application allow list, they'll use what we call living off the land techniques. Any application available to them on that device, they will utilize and weaponize that application. Probably most prevalent would be PowerShell, for example. It's installed on every single Windows device. It's involved in over 54% of all ransomware attacks publicized this year for that reason. So we can say, okay, well, let's allow the applications we want to run, but let's further restrict and control what they can and cannot do. So this is where we apply what we call ring fencing. In other words, PowerShell can run, it cannot interact with any other applications, it cannot access all of my data, It cannot reach out to the internet to go out to a command and control to download a payload or malware. So this is where ring fencing differentiates us from normal application lawlessness. Of those trusted applications, we've secured them and stopped them from being weaponized against ourselves. In terms of the actual overall layout, the layout of ThreatLocker is very simple and very easy to A, implement and B, maintain. A lot of security solutions out there have a lot of complex processes and workflows in order to get things done. The whole concept of when ThreatLocker was designed and originated was to do things in an easy, manageable fashion so that all admins can be able to just pick this up, learn it very easily, very quickly, and be able to secure their environment quickly.
Thank you. So listeners have heard of things like containers, jails like Drew and BSD jails. How does ThreatLocker handle application compartmentalization, and what advantages does that model offer?
Yeah, so that application compartmentalization is done through a ring fencing. But not only that, let's say, for example, a user was to request an application that an admin doesn't know what it is. Well, we can easily just spin up a virtualized sandbox environment. We can run that application through that environment, and we can identify anything that is potentially malicious within that application without even having to allow that application to run in the environment. So we can test all this prior to actually approving applications.
Sponsored by Boudica Cybersecurity, maintaining digital realms.
So we're all familiar with classic Unix file permissions, maybe some of us a bit less so with SE Linux and other operating systems that restrain capabilities. Tell us how ThreatLocker works with respect to device and file access.
So one of the parts of our solution is called storage control. So storage control is basically granular-based access to the data in your environment. So in a Windows environment, every single application the user runs, that application can access all of the data the user can access because it runs under their file permissions. When you install an application in a Mac environment, the first thing that application will ask for, can I have disk access? Because it's not inherent in Macs, but it is in Windows. So by utilizing storage control, we can say, okay, well, this particular piece of data can only be accessed by these particular softwares, and that's it. Never mind the user, never mind the machine. So in a given scenario, let's go a bit old school for a second. Let's say your local backups. Mm-hmm. Local backups are stored in a location where everything is backed up to that location. What needs access to that backup location? Well, it's not a user and it's not a device. The only thing that needs access is the actual backup process itself. By limiting that access, even if a threat actor got into your environment, they can't touch your backup location. They can't access it. They have to break into your backup process itself in order to gain access to that data.
Just more and more barriers going up in this ring fence. Yeah. So many fences and that layer of defense to really help our users, whatever skill level they have, to access that high level cybersecurity. On the network side, how does ThreatLocker advance traditional systems like Snort?
So traditional systems like your intrusion detection systems are looking for known threats. Again, we work off the principle of zero trust. Only allow access where access is required. We do have a host-based firewall, which is managed centrally from a single location. Similar to a Windows firewall, but the biggest exception is we keep everything in a closed state. So all of the ports and all of the servers and workstations are kept in that closed state. We only open those ports if and when required to authenticated devices. We utilize dynamic ACLs to only allow access to those what we call object-based access. When I, as a user, need to access, let's say, RDP on a server, I connect in, it'll open up the port, it'll allow me that access. But as soon as I close out of that, that port is in a closed state. Now, if a threat actor gets into my environment and does a full port scan of that server, that RDP port is never in an open state. Mm. It's not even seen there. So no matter what vulnerability scans you run against the server, you can see or pick out any of the holes in the environment.
Is complex file monitoring and regular testing of hashes still the key to intrusion detection?
Again, this goes back to the old method of how we actually deal with security at the endpoint level. Is detection better than prevention? So if you can stop it from running in the first place, you're better off stopping it from running.
Exactly. Talk us through the technicalities of ransomware prevention.
So ransomware prevention is very simple. Ransomware is all about data. If you can protect your data, you can protect yourself from being a victim of a ransomware attack. And the thing with ransomware attacks is, ransomware attackers or hackers will work off the weakest chain in the link. So if you make your environment as secure as possible, they're not going to hang around. they will just move on. So by utilizing a zero trust in your environment, not allow applications to run that don't need to run. So that means they can't drop their own payload, malware, software, identify anything that is running in the environment, like remote access tools that may not be need to be run, remove them from your environment. So you're stopping the methods of getting in. And then even if they were to get in, by applying those ring fence and controls around your network and controls around your storage, you're stopping any lateral movement and anything possible for any access to your data in your environment.
So how does ThreatLocker handle protecting hierarchical backups?
So again, that goes back to the whole sense of what needs access to the backups. And the true answer is only the backup process needs access. So by protecting that backup location and that data, you're stopping anything from happening with that data.
It feels like you're having to do a lot of work that maybe the operating system providers should have done initially as well, if they'd thought of the way that ThreatLocker do.
You know, there is a lot of loopholes within our systems these days, and particularly around Windows. You know, there was a time where, you know, we were told that command prompt was going to be depreciated and we'd never use it again. As system admins, we use it every day. It's never going to go away. Underneath the hood, nothing has really changed. It's just evolved. But all of those vulnerabilities, not only in the actual operating system, but if you take, for example, Microsoft Office, constant vulnerabilities that are published and seen. So we seen, was it 2022, the Felina vulnerability? You could easily just embed in a docx file to execute malware or ransomware in an environment.
Ed.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how does ThreatLocker's approach differ when maybe protecting endpoints in higher security industries like healthcare or finance? And how would you compare to other companies with your products in that way?
So again, we just take that approach completely different. So our goal is to change that paradigm of security from a default allow and hope we catch something that's potentially malicious to a default deny and only allow what needs to be run. And we're talking about healthcare. I had a misfortune of actually being in one of our hospitals here in Dublin not so long ago. And the surgeon left me in the room for 20 minutes with his PC unlocked right in front of me. And I'm going, no, please don't do anything. But again, that's not their job. Their job isn't security minded. Their job is to look after patients. So again, you can see how easy it is. If I was something nefarious, I could have easily gotten in and plugged in maybe a USB rubber ducky or created a reverse PowerShell onto that device.
Or install ThreatLocker for them.
Or install ThreatLocker for them, yes.
What kernel level features do you employ?
So when it comes to ThreatLocker, we do install at the kernel level of the operating system. And one of the features that gives us the ability to remove the needs or wants of end users having local admin privileges. There's still legacy applications out there that might require a user to have that local admin privilege. Well, when it comes to ThreatLocker, we say, well, does the user actually need that privilege? Or is it just the application itself? We see this quite a lot in development environments where IDE tools might require those local admin privileges. So we can elevate just the application itself without ever elevating the users themselves. Now, one of the biggest issues with privileged access management solutions is when you allow a user to run an application with elevated privileges, well, if there's any open dialogue box within that application, they can move laterally from that application to any other application and let that permission follow with them. By simply applying ring fencing around those elevations, we'd say, okay, this legacy application can run with the privilege it needs, but it cannot interact with any other applications out there in the environment.
Perfect zero trust. So the ideas of giving applications a time window is not new, but ThreatLocker makes this rather easy. Can mums use this to limit their kids' gaming and chat access? How does ThreatLocker do this compared to, say, a cron job that switches some application firewall rules?
We can easily allow time-based applications. So any request whatsoever can be a permanent request, a time-based request, and we can do that very simply through our very easy UX environment as well. So potentially they could.
I'll let all the mums know.
Yes.
On the topic of zero trust architecture, I was going to ask, in your experience, what are some common misconceptions around zero trust that you might have encountered, and how does ThreatLocker actually approach that?
Yeah, one of the common misconceptions around zero trust, a lot of people, when they hear zero trust, and it is one of those branded words now that every company out there uses, but it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. The true concept of zero trust is to only allow access where access is required. And we see a lot of companies that, like you're never going to get to a perfection of zero trust. It is more of a journey. And when it comes to security, security is always about a layered approach. So some companies might adopt zero trust at the network level. So they'll do network segmentation. But again, that doesn't lock down the device. When you think about a ransomware attack, as an attacker, I'm not going to go after the big guns like the Microsofts or the Googles or the Amazons, because they have the infrastructure in place. If I was going to attack any organization, I'm not going to go after the corporate organization because it's backed by hardware firewalls. I'll go after the end users. Path of least resistance as an attacker is where you get in the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I've witnessed that myself a number of times working in cybersecurity. Any security product is only as good as the underlying kernel and hardware models. So what kinds of limits have you hit with the ThreatLocker product?
Well, in terms of limits, like security always evolves. And the ThreatLocker product itself, like that, like all other products, has evolved over the years. Initially, we started out at just application and level listing. So we've also introduced ring fencing, storage control, network control, configuration management, which is a policy-driven security of our devices to harden the security. And then we introduced, obviously, our own EDR solution. So based on everything that our agent will pick up on, the telemetry-wise, reads-wise, moves and deletes of data, installations, executions of applications, network traffic inbound and outbound, combine that with Windows logs, we can pretty much detect and respond to any indicators of compromise, and we can actually address those indicators as well.
So you've built a product on the wave of a good reputation of customer support. People who use ThreatLocker like ThreatLocker and the company. Can you keep this up and scale it? Coming from education, we know well that sometimes 1% of the group uses 99% of the support resources. What's your experience of educating people to use your system, and how do you balance and scale that up as you grow?
At the core of ThreatLocker is our support, and we really pride ourselves in that support that we provide to our customers. So as I said, every customer that joins ThreatLocker, they do get assigned a solution engineer. So that solution engineer has all the experience of securing environments without affecting productivity in that environment. We don't charge for professional service fees or onboarding fees or anything like that. That comes part of the actual contract with ThreatLocker. On top of that, we have our support department, which is what we call cyber heroes. So our cyber heroes are accessible 24/7, 365 days a year. The guys in our cyber hero team have a SLO of a response time of 60 seconds or less. Their average response time right now is 23 seconds. So if you're stuck with anything, they'll jump on a call straight away and help you out.
So one of the biggest emerging issues in security is really political. Whose security is it? We have hostile big tech companies trying to turn users' computers into remote-controlled devices that they don't control or own anymore, with so-called trusted computing tricks that load code, so-called protected code, into people's systems that is malicious. What's a gal to do?
Again, all of this is about what you need to allow to run on your environment and block everything else. So if it's not needed, just block and deny it. And it's not only that. We see genuine applications being used nefariously. Let's say AnyDesk, for example, the remote access tool. Yes, a lot of companies use it for third-party support, but a lot of hackers also use it to gain access to end users through social engineering tricks or anything like that to install and access those devices as well.
Absolutely. You've got to keep your wits about you every day when you're working with computers. So how do I know you're looking out for your users and not Microsoft or Sony?
That's a very simple answer. We are a privately owned company, privately run company, and we only do things for our own company.
So platform question now. The Linux version is currently lagging quite a way behind the Windows version. Is that because you started developing on Windows, and how do you plan to bring Linux code up to speed?
Yeah, that'll be very true. The Linux agent is probably one of the latest release of agents that we've done. We've been working on a Windows agent for over 9 years. So obviously we have a lot of history there with the Windows agent. We are bringing that up to par with the Linux agent as well.
I think you've hinted as well that Windows has probably needed a little bit more work. It's obviously in use a lot more as well. So we're seeing a lot more attacks. Absolutely. Okay, Ed.
Yes, further on the platforming questions. Obviously, we know Windows is one of the most vulnerable platforms and also one of the most widely used as well. What are the biggest challenges you see with maybe multi-vendor deployments? And how does ThreatLocker deal with that? If you've got a company that comes to you and says, half our systems are Linux, we've got a load of Macs, we've got Windows, different versions. We've got loads of different software capability. So what's kind of the biggest challenges you might have seen, or some of the most complex setups, and how do you approach that?
Yeah, so we often do come across very complex environments whereby the range of operating systems is completely vast. So they'll have Linux servers and AWS running. They're feeding those systems into Windows machines locally, or else Mac devices as well. When it comes to ThreatLocker, we do cross-platform as well. So we support Linux, Red Hat, and Ubuntu. We support Mac, Ventura, and above. We support all Windows as well. We even have an agent for an XP agent and a Server 2003. Because believe it or not, there is still a lot of governmental and enterprise relying on them as OT devices as well. So it does make it a little more complex to secure those environments, but nothing that we can't handle easily.
Fair enough. What would you say would be the next biggest challenge then in terms of maybe vendor software or operating systems in terms of cybersecurity that ThreatLocker is aiming to address or is addressing maybe?
Well, with the increase of, let's say, for example, Windows has its hold over the actual, you know, most devices that are out there. Mac is improving and the numbers of Mac users is gaining. And like everything else, when there's an opportunity there for attackers, there needs to be a response. And that's why the reason why we've branched out into different agents as well, be it the Mac and the Linux agent as well.
Yeah, cheers.
This episode of The Cyber Show is kindly sponsored by Boudica Cybersecurity.
So we're going to get into a couple of the tougher questions now.
Hang on, they weren't the tougher ones.
No, they were the easier ones. So some features of ThreatLocker are basically a remote endpoint management system, which isn't the exact model that we do encourage at Boudica. For customers who want to abdicate management of their computers to somebody else to concede remote access, how are they assured of your trustworthiness? Where is the ThreatLocker for ThreatLocker, and who guards the guards at the castle?
That's a very good question. As a cybersecurity company, we have a lot of processes and policies in place around what we can access and what we cannot access. Now, one of the things about the ThreatLocker solution itself, yes, we can manage what can run on a device, but we don't have any ability to push anything to that device. We are merely just allowing, saying yes or no to what needs to run, but we cannot push anything out to that device itself. So one of the biggest questions we always get, well, what happens if ThreatLocker gets hacked? Well, even if it were to happen in the worst case scenario, the only thing an attacker could do is say, okay, we're going to allow access to this software, but they need to have access to both the endpoint and the portal and everything else, which chances are is not going to be very high.
So you take your security as seriously as you do your clients, which is what forms that basis of protection.
We take our security more than our own clients as well. As an employee of ThreatLocker, I cannot do anything on my systems whatsoever. So I even had difficulty joining this particular podcast because it does require interaction in my browser, which I had to get approval for just to get onto this podcast.
Sounds like you guys should be consulting a few other companies in the UK and Ireland there on their security a bit more.
Maybe.
In a similar vein, when you build systems like this, you take on a huge amount of responsibility. To own all of your customers, a hacker would have to break into thousands of individual systems, just as you said, all protected by your amazing software. But another way to breach all those systems is just to hack you. So who do you think is your biggest threat to yourselves on the basis of that?
Who's the biggest threat to ourselves? That answer is like, how long is a piece of rope? Like any security solution out there, there will be advocates out there to try and break into that system for one reason or another. We have all of the security policies and processes and procedures in place to segregate everything within ThreatLocker. Even if somebody got onto my device, they're very much not going to be able to access anything.
I was just going to follow up with that question is, have you taken any learnings from the CrowdStrike incident, and how does ThreatLocker work with their staging processes and actually ensure their software is fully functional before it's then staged to the customers automatically or updated?
The difference with ThreatLocker and the difference between a typical EDR-based solution in that sense is an EDR-based solution is constantly trying to keep up with threats and unknown malware. So it's constantly trying to have to write new definitions and update those definitions on a daily basis. We don't. So in that instance, it was actually admitted that it didn't actually go through the QA process and it was a bad update that caused the crash. We, TrailLocker ourselves, were able to actually mitigate that as well with clients that had TrailLocker installed, because we actually stopped that bad update from actually executing on the devices in the first place. So that was easy to answer. The second part of that is that when it comes to TrailLocker, if we do updates, we have a 5-step process before anything even gets to the general public. So we will go through testing, QA, we'll go through an alpha test, we'll go through a beta test. We have beta pre-release clients that are on the beta pre-release. If we identify anything in any of that chain, it is stopped and rollback.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you.
Do application firewalls encourage deployment of known less secure applications?
Yeah, well, they are. The reliance on higher-end EDRs and XDRs and everything else to look for those indicators of compromise and identify those indicator compromise is much less.
Yeah.
Okay, and the false positives that they then generate is obviously much less, because if you're only allowing what you need to allow to run, well, you're not constantly having to look for anything that's potentially malicious running, because you know what's running.
Yeah, I think I was kind of approaching that question maybe from a consumer overconfidence point of view, maybe, but that makes total sense.
He's going to be a bit mean now and ask you about some academics, so if you've never heard of them, don't worry, we'll just move on. So from an academic point of view, what are the lessons that pioneers like Renum, Denning, Bass and Newman taught us that are still topical today?
We don't remunerate badness. There you go, you have a record.
that's the one well done.
You're surely too cautious to claim that there are no vulnerabilities in ThreatLocker. Maybe you remember Network Associates Gauntlet, the world's most secure firewall, and how Jim Stickley found a cascade of RCEs. What do you worry about most in the architecture of ThreatLocker?
Like every system is not perfect. And like every other system, we go through our own regular pen testing as well of our own solution and our own architecture, just to identify where something may have been missed in that secure development and design. So it is a constant challenge to keep on top of that and make sure that even by designing code, that code is secure in design at source.
Again, I wish more companies would do this from day one. Fred Cohen noted in 1987 that it is impossible to detect an intrusion in every case, and that the resources needed to detect intrusions grow with the amount of usage. Given the exponential growth of usage, are we looking for small signals in a sea of noise?
A sea of noise is one of those things that, again, going back to your detection and response and looking for those indicators of compromise, well, if there's so much things coming at you and you don't know what is right or wrong in an environment that typically is a default allow environment, it's very difficult to identify those potential indicators of compromise. And one of the biggest issues with traditional EDR-based solutions is they take in behavioral analysis as part of that detection and response. We like to do what we call a rubber ducky challenge on our audiences. And basically all it is it's a USB device that looks like a USB device, seems like a USB device, but in fact it's a keyboard, which has scripts stored inside that actual device. When it's plugged in, it basically goes through the user's folders, it'll upload it to Google Drive, and their security solution will sit there happily and let it happen. Why? Because it just looks like the user's uploading their data to Google. And it's a perfectly normal behavioral concept to that, but we know it's something nefarious. And again, by applying techniques like ring fencing, we can just block and deny that and identify that easily.
Welcome to our workplace cybersecurity training. Our course is unique, flexible study, very high academic quality, and high impact. Especially built by an expert team of university professors to deliver the same standard of teaching you'd find at a top university, but for beginners. If you're interested and want us to be part of your journey to better company cybersecurity, contact us at Boudica, boudicasecurity.com.
At Boudica, we draw a distinction between security and protection. Protection is something that somebody else gives you. Security is something that you can learn for life. Like the difference between learning kung fu and having a tough mate who you hang around with. How much are you a master sensei, or how much are you hired muscle?
That is a very good question. I would say the product itself is the muscle, but the fact that we offer air services to secure your environment is the master itself. So one of the biggest issues with security solutions out there is that a lot of companies will take on a security solution and only implement one shiny part of that product and forget about all of the rest of the solution. By having that ongoing partnership and relationship with the solution, we can implement the whole solution.
I like the idea of thinking that you get to call up someone from ThreatLocker and they're sat there as a kung fu master of cybersecurity.
We call them cyber heroes, not kung fu masters.
There we go. That's where they've got that name. I hope they feel proud every day. They should. So how do you solve this fundamental weakness of the managed endpoint philosophy that marks the border between secure, informed autonomy and a protection racket for the terminally bewildered?
Well, look, when it comes to security, it's one of those areas that has grown exponentially over the past number of years. And the reason for that is quite simple. The number of ransomware attacks has grown exponentially over the past number of years as well. The number of vulnerabilities reported has grown exponentially over the past number of years. So CVEs year on year have increased and increased and increased. It's that need to be secure against this sea of attacks or potential attacks is where we come in.
Perfect. Oh, I've got the last question here. You've done so well on these tough ones too. Oh, Ed's going to chime in before that.
Sorry, I just wanted to jump in there before we go on to kind of self-protection.
Well, we got off the top questions. Get away.
I was just going to say, we've probably got a couple of listeners that are maybe small business owners, sometimes with limited resources, or most of the time even. So what would you say are the top three priorities that they should focus on to actually secure maybe their endpoints or their systems in general?
So the top three priorities around their systems is A, remove any local admins, okay? Now, removing a local admin is not going to stop a ransomware attack, let's face it. But what it will do is it'll stop an attacker gain a foothold within the environment, okay? Secondly, by implementing a zero trust model and only allowing what you need to run, your reliance then on detection-based solutions to find something malicious in your environment is much less. The third part about it is what you don't know, you don't know. So by implementing a simple application or layer listening solution and seeing what's running in your environment, then you can actually tackle that. Because a lot of companies out there, particularly small to medium businesses, do not know what's running on the endpoints. As users can run anything on the endpoints, at least that way, once you know, you can start identifying those weaknesses and then take care of those weaknesses.
With all the breakthroughs in machine learning lately, you must be very excited. Where do you think that you might be going with that in intrusion detection soon?
Yeah, so one of the things we always get asked about at any events and even talking with our clients is, how is AI going to shape the future of security? Right now, all it does is correct spelling mistakes in phishing attacks. Really, outside of that, it doesn't do very much. Now, having said that, you can go on to ChatGPT, Copilot, or anything like that, and easily grab the code for maybe a reverse shell that you can then execute on an end user device. But again, by simply just going back to the simple concept of let's change everything from a default allow to a default deny, doesn't matter how much AI is involved in that, we're simply just stopping everything. I'll tell you, before I joined ThreatLocker, I came from a managed service provider. And back in 2018, it was when WannaCry was really rampant around everywhere. Now, at the time, we were responsible for the security of all of our clients. And one of our clients actually got hit with ransomware. It took us 14 hours to restore his system. It was a mid-sized law firm where they had 50 employees within that company. So 15 hours of downtime for that amount of employees is very costly. So needless to say, they weren't too happy. They were like, look, we're paying for the security. Why did this happen? So explained it. We got through it. Everything was fine. 2 weeks later, the very same thing happened to the very same client. James had to get in his car, drive down to the client, and then meet with the client, who was irate at this stage. And he said, look, we're paying you for all of this security solution. We're paying for everything. Why? What can I do to stop this from happening? And at the time, we didn't have ThreatLocker. The only answer I could give him was, I'm sorry, Enda, you're going to have to sack your receptionist. This is the only answer I could give him. Because we had everything in place.
Yeah.
We had done security awareness training and done everything. But there was nothing to stop her from clicking on everything, downloading and executing everything.
It's always layer eight.
Yeah, it's the only answer I could give him. We then took on ThreatLocker. We implemented ThreatLocker, the managed service provider. I drank the Kool-Aid. I now work for ThreatLocker. So That's how strongly I believe in them.
Brilliant.
It's funny, we had that one from Jeff, didn't we, a few days ago when we had our ransomware negotiator. That was another Karen in reception who... In the end, she had to have a circle of guards literally standing around her. Still managed to pick on something. Again.
I heard that. Shoulder surfing all day long.
Yeah. Maybe just a line from you, Seamus, about where our listeners can contact you or ThreatLocker in general if they want to find out more about your products.
Oh, your product, yeah.
Just go. Yeah, I should maybe plug the product, shouldn't I?
Yeah,
so if anybody wants to find out anything more about ThreatLocker or find anything educational about cybersecurity and defense, we are all over Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. Check out our YouTube channel. We constantly do webinars around cybersecurity, some really good webinars, and some webinars where we actually crash drones into the CEO's window. Not intentionally, but we've done it. please visit our website. You'll be able to pick up content there. And if you'd like to get in touch with ourselves, you can click through a link there. You will be put in touch with any members of the staff within ThreatLocker.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on the Cyber Show today.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Cyber Show.